Welcome to the third edition of A Classic of the Month. Today, Tarkus by Emerson, Lake and Palmer. When we explore the secrets of Close to the Edge, we examine the piece with a very tight connection between music and lyrics. Jon Anderson, main composer of the music together with Steve Howe, is also the author of the lyrics. Tarkus, on the other hand, was a result of merging two parallel processes. Most of the music, with the exception of Battlefield, was written by Emerson, while all the lyrics were written by Greg Lake. It is a relatively well-known fact that Tarkus initially generated friction between Emerson and Lake. According to Emerson, "When I showed the piece to Greg, he said, 'I can't play that kind of music. If that's what you want to play, then I think you should look for someone else to play with.'" Lake was finally convinced to give it a shot, and the music gradually grew within him to the point that he developed some of his finest lyrics and included a piece of his own. As a result of these independent endeavors, Tarkus is quite self-sufficient as an abstract music piece. However, a full interpretation of the conceptual framework behind the piece allows a true rediscovery of this progressive rock masterpiece. Tarkus is a multi-movement suite, where all the movements except Stone of Years and Mass share common melodic material. There are also other very interesting musical considerations, but I will go back to them later in the analysis. Let's concentrate on the conceptual framework, which is what will truly allow us to listen to this piece under a very different light. There have been different interpretations of what Tarkus represents. Edward McCann, in his book Rocking the Classics, makes an accurate summary. Tarkus can be seen to symbolize a totalitarian society. One thinks of how Big Brother crushed spirituality, individuality, and tradition in Orwell's 1984. Or equally, Tarkus can be seen to symbolize technology run amok, out of the control of its creators, visiting misery upon all it touches. Perhaps, Tarkus can even be seen to represent materialism, which poisons everything around it. None of these readings are mutually exclusive. More than non-exclusive, I would say that they complement each other. In fact, here's another interpretation based on my article, The Call to the Ephemeral and Its Effect on Art. Tarkus could represent the entertainment society that is devouring culture, transforming it into mass entertainment. The 11 images in the album's Inner Gatefold, created by William Neal, are crucial to creating a framework through which the piece's concept is conveyed. The first image represents the opening section, Eruption. It depicts Tarkus emerging from an egg on the side of an active volcano. Tarkus is really a cybernetic creature, part armadillo and part tank. It fights and claims victory with different cybernetic animals. However, it is defeated, at least temporarily, by the only creature that is completely biological, the manticore. This strange figure, mixture of different animals, man, lion, scorpion, among others, is able to sting Tarkus's left eye, forcing him to retreat. The final panel is perfectly described by Edward McCann. Tarkus is seen floating down a river on its side. Blood appears to be flowing from his head, but its gun turrets still appear operable, so it is hard to say to what, if any degree, it has been incapacitated. Manticore is the first of Tarkus's foes that is not cybernetic but completely organic. Significantly, while the Manticore is unable to destroy Tarkus, it is at least able to withstand its assaults, to injure it, and drive it into hiding. It seems to me that the organic nature of the Manticore holds the key to interpreting the conceptual foundation underlying the Tarkus suite. The Manticore seems to symbolize the natural or spiritually authentic man or woman, unencumbered by materialism, unbeholden to technology, unafraid of Big Brother. The whole suite revolves around this concept. As we will see, the lyrics reflect on the state of mankind and the struggle for human nature to prevail over the diverse forces that are slowly annihilating the sense of individuality in every human being. By the way, this struggle between man and machine is also represented in Carnival 9, which we will analyze in a future program. It is no coincidence that the concepts behind Close to the Edge and Tarkus share many common views. Close to the Edge is more spiritual and Tarkus more political, but they all point in the same direction. Warning signs about where political, economic, and technological forces can lead us to. Both pieces were written still under the influence of the psychedelic hippie movement. It was losing its grip on society in the early 70s, but still had a strong inertia. Looking at the piece from a musical structure point of view, the first organizing principle is the juxtaposition of odd-numbered instrumental movements with even-numbered song movements. A second organizing principle has to do with the tempo. The first three instrumental sections are fast, whereas the first and third songs are slow, in line with the mournful character of the lyrics. The sharp and ironic lyrics of the second song are represented by a faster tempo. The final instrumental section combines a slow tempo, the funeral march, with a recapitulation of the sizzling opening theme. From an overall perspective, Tarkus is organized following a nested structure. Instrumental fast, song slow, instrumental fast, song fast, instrumental fast, song slow, instrumental fast. So starting from the middle movement, the only fast song, Mass, the suite is symmetrical and begins and ends with the same material. Now let's look at each of the movements in more detail. Let's start with Eruption. The music in Eruption perfectly depicts the first scene. Its obsessive pattern in 5-4 gives a dynamic representation of what is going on. The rising pressure of the lava generated within the volcano ends up spitting an egg out of which Tarkus emerges and runs down the hill to destroy everything at sight. One could claim that the lava represents the different forces, sociological, economic, technological, that have created this entertainment society, devoid of spirit, cultural values, solidarity, who tries to find sense in life by way of a relentless mass consumption, the Tarkus. The piece starts with a vocal effect. Lake recorded 20 different ahs at different pitches, creating a volcanic mass that explodes into an ostinato figure. Fans with music knowledge frequently refer to this ostinato as a classic example of progressive rock using odd tempos because the figure is written in 5/8. However, if you follow my explanation of music phrases in the analysis of Close to the Edge, you will see that the phrases that build up the melody rather suggest a 4 plus 3 plus 3 or a 4 plus 6. So, this fragment of Tarkus is actually not an accurate example of a 5-beat rhythm. Let's listen to it. The form of Eruption is A, B, A prime, C, A double prime, C prime, and coda. Here are the beginnings of each section so you can easily identify them. A. B. A prime. C. A double prime. C Prime. The A sections are built with different variations of a bass ostinato. The use of ostinato bass figures became a trademark of Emerson's music. Tarkus is an excellent example of his mastery in the use of this resource. It is introduced in Eruption, but used in other sections of the suite. Here's where you can find them in other movements. Finally, it is interesting to point out that a rhythmic motif is used to relate the B and C sections. In order to help you identify it, here's a piano example. The bass note presents the figure, and the treble note indicates the beats. In section B, notice how it is used in the bass. Then by the organ with a rhythm variation. In section C, the pattern is used but in a compressed format. And again compressed, but this time adding two quarter note chords as a way to go back to the 5-4 pattern in A double prime. Now let's move to the Stones of Years. As Edward McCann points out, the lyrics of the Stones of Years can be summarized with the phrase, "Tarkus has obliterated cultural tradition." He speaks of time that has been overgrown, never known, days that have made you so unwise. With this insight, the lyrics are straightforward and require no interpretation. Has the dawn ever seen your eyes? Have the days made you so unwise, realize you are? Had you talked to the winds of time, then you'd know how the waters rhyme, taste of wine. How can you know where you've been? In time, you'll see the sign and realize your sin. Will you know how the seed is sown? All your time has been overgrown, never known. Have you walked on the stones of years? When you speak, is it you that hears? Are your ears full? You can't hear anything at all. The only matter left to interpretation is who are these lyrics addressed to? According to Peter Ford in his master's thesis, the rhetorical questions in the lyrics are directed at the Tarkus. In my opinion, they are aimed at the listener. The structure of the movement is uppercase A, instrumental, lowercase a, B, instrumental, uppercase A, instrumental, uppercase A, and coda. I use the lowercase a because only four measures from A are used before entering section B. Each sung section is separated by instrumental passages that are based on the same bass pattern. It is interesting to point out that this pattern is introduced in the coda of the Eruption. Let's listen to some fragments. state of affairs described in the lyrics is represented by a strange cybernetic artifact that seems to be a building that might very well represent mankind's current situation. Tarkus doesn't seem to find much trouble in destroying it. It is very small in comparison to him, and the music doesn't portray a sense of battle, but rather despair. The second victim of Tarkus is a cybernetic pterosaur warplane mutant called Iconoclast. This movement clearly shows the Tarkus in all its fury as it goes about his business of destroying everything at sight. The ostinato figure presented in Eruption returns, but in diminution, 16th notes, to convey the idea of a forceful and dynamic movement. Most of the movement is in 5/8, with intricate changes of tempo showing ELP's performing abilities at its best. The initial descending scale in 2/2 represents the Iconoclast flying down to meet the Tarkus and his defeat. The form of Iconoclast falls into a large binary form. Part A includes the bass ostinato on the first part, while B presents a more static bass with occasional ostinato appearing on the right hand. Here's my interpretation of what is going on. During part A, the Iconoclast is flying while fire and bullets are spit out of Tarkus's fiery turrets. He runs at full speed to avoid the Iconoclast attack. Do you want to listen how Tarkus fires at the sky? Here it is. And how the Iconoclast is shot and falls down to earth. This event marks the end of part A and beginning of B. Now Tarkus runs to find where the Iconoclast has landed and stops in front of him. The Iconoclast is in the ground at his mercy. The ostinato figure stops. Tarkus moves in for the kill. The final measures, with a breaking rhythm, short and long notes alternating in the bass, quite eloquently describe the final struggle before the Iconoclast is put to rest. Now let's turn to Mass. Although it may appear that the title refers to a Roman Catholic liturgical celebration, my interpretation of the lyrics is that Tarkus is destroying all forms of spiritual tradition. Religions turn into fanatic movements that defeat their own purpose, the weaver in the web that he made. Religion followers committing every sin that they could. The situation of the Middle East at the beginning of the 21st century is perfectly described with phrases like minister of hate, messenger of fear. Again, from this perspective, the lyrics require no further interpretation. They call forth some of Lake's angriest and most imaginative lyrics. The preacher said a prayer, save every single hair on his head. He's dead. The minister of hate had just arrived too late to be spared. Who cared? The weaver in the web that he made. The pilgrim wandered in, committing every sin that he could. So good. The cardinal of grief was set in his belief he'd be saved from the grave. The weaver in the web that he made. The high priest took a blade to bless the ones that prayed, and all obeyed. The messenger of fear is slowly growing nearer to the time, a sign, the weaver in the web that he made. A bishop rings a bell, a cloak of darkness fell across the ground without a sound. The silent choir sing, and in their silence bring jaded sound, harmonic ground, the weaver in the web that he made. The form of Mass is very simple. There is no contrasting B section. All strophes use the same musical idea, with a tonal change in the last two. After the third strophe, there is a long instrumental section where tension is built gradually. It may very well represent the scene battle with a lizard locust missile launcher cybernetic creature depicted in the inner fold. It is also defeated by the Tarkas. Finally, we reach the only fully biological creature and the only one able to withstand the attack of the Tarkas, the Manticore. From a musical point of view, Manticore is very similar to Iconoclast. Themes are built around an ostinato, this time in a metric figure of 9x8. Again, strong syncopated sections seem to represent Tarkas firing at his enemy. There is, however, a significant deviation from previous instrumental movements. The rapid ostinato that represents the Tarkas is suddenly stopped by fragments where the organ remains solo. The organ is presented under a rich sea of reverb as if being played in an enormous cathedral. This might represent the spiritual or human aspect of the Manticore. Tarkas's attacks are stopped by some sort of supernatural, mystic, power. Let's listen to the fragment with this interpretation. The battle goes on, and the drum solo in the end seems to signal the moment when Tarkas is stung in the eye and retreats. Note that the drum solo is preceded by the same syncopated sections that represent the attack, but this time it is the Manticore who is in control, whipping the Tarkas repeatedly with his tail until he hits the target, Tarkas's only vulnerable spot, his eyes. According to Peter Ford, the form of the Manticore is a six-part form with coda. However, I believe it is better interpreted as a theme and variations with an interlude. A prime, B, A double prime, A triple prime, A, and coda. Where A through A triple prime are variations on A. B is a short contrasting theme in the middle. At the end of the movement, the A theme is recapitulated and the coda is in the form of a drum solo. Let's listen to the movement and I will identify each section. A. A prime. B. A double prime. A triple prime. A. When the battle is over, the Manticore reflects on what has happened as he watches the Tarkas flowing down the river while blood pours from his left eye. He appears to be dead, but is he? we now move to the battlefield. Within the context of the suite, battlefield appears to be a reflection, a sort of debriefing of the battle that has just ended. However, given the nature of the Tarkus, its annihilation should not produce the sense of bitterness portrayed in the lyrics. Lake, or rather, the Manticore, is clearly not singing to the defeated Tarkus. He would not tell him, "You talk of freedom, starving children fall." Lake is clearly talking to the listener. Both McCann and Ford argue that Battlefield is a protest song related to Vietnam War, and I believe that they are correct. However, there is a phrase that is significant and links back to the conceptual framework of the piece. "Where the blades of grass and arrows rain, then there'd be no sorrow, be no pain." Quoting McCann, "By superseding the technology of war, arrows, with natural phenomena, blades of grass, Lake seems to suggest that there is one way to stop from suffering. Humans need to short-circuit technological progress to re-enter a natural, prematerialistic state." This ties in nicely with the fact that the Manticore is the only non-cybernetic creature. Here are the lyrics. "Clear the battlefield and let me see all the profit from our victory. You talk of freedom, starving children fall. Are you deaf when you hear the seasons call? Were you there to watch the earth be scorched? Did you stand beside the spectral torch? Know the leaves of sorrow turned their face, scattered on the ashes of disgrace. Every blade is sharp, the arrows fly, where the victims of your armies lie. Where the blaze of grass and arrows rain, then there'd be no sorrow, be no pain." The form of Battlefield is a simple strophic form using almost identical music for each strophe. Intro, A, that is verse 1, A prime, verse 2, instrumental solos, two of them, A double prime, which is verse 3. The harmonic structure of the solos follow the same pattern of the verses. The most interesting aspect from a musical point of view is the anticipation of the Aqua Tarkus theme that appears between verses 1 and 2, before solos 1 and 2, and before verse 3. Even though the music of Battlefield is credited to Lake, I strongly believe that some passages correspond to Emerson. Ford, in his thesis, also supports this theory. The complex harmony of the initial seven measures carry the stylistic stamp of Emerson. Also, of course, the Aqua Tarkus theme corresponds to Emerson, not only because of stylistic reasons, but also because the last movement, Aqua Tarkus, is credited only to Emerson. I also invite you to listen to what the organ is doing while Lake is singing. I believe the harmonic embellishments also correspond to Emerson. So in addition to the lyrics, Lake is probably the author of the melody and the harmonic structure of each verse. Let's listen to the fragments that I believe correspond to Emerson. The last movement is Aqua Tarkus. The time signature, a simple 4x4, and the drum pattern suggest a march. A funeral march for Tarkus, who is forced to deal with the fact that he must now adapt to his new environment, a river. He becomes an Aqua Tarkus. The music effectively describes the Aqua Tarkus floating away, and like an agonic creature, he has sudden spasms to try to recover his vitality. We'll be right back. The music starts to recede slowly, leaving only the snare drum. This depicts the manticore watching as the aquatarcus fades away in the distance. The snare drum keeps the mournful character of the piece. We have stated all along that the tarcus may not have been destroyed, but was only temporarily disabled. The reason for this is by interpreting the last section of this movement. A straight recapitulation of eruption indicates that the struggle is not over. Tarcus seems to come back in what form? The last measures of the suite may give you a clue.